Hi, welcome to the stream. I'm Ahmed Shahabuddin, filling in for Femi Oke. Today, we're discussing a new documentary by our colleagues at AJ Plus, One Day in Hebron. The film follows Al Jazeera's Dina Takruri as she travels back to the old city where her father grew up. Let's take a quick look at the trailer.
This is what I experienced minutes after setting foot in my family's hometown.
We literally just got here. We went through the first military checkpoint, and a bunch of soldiers stopped us, started yelling at us.
I'm in the old city of Hebron in the occupied West Bank, a place that once bustled with life. But I'm about to see what Israel's occupation and settlers have done to the heart of this city. And to the people who live here. I'm a Palestinian-American journalist, and I've spent much of my career reporting on the occupied territories. But Hebron, one of the West Bank's largest cities, is also my roots. My father was born and raised here. I've returned to learn how the occupation has decimated his beloved hometown, a place he hasn't been back to in years.
I had a mixed feeling, nostalgia with anger and despair over despair. What can I say?
I know it's really hard for him to see this, and so it's emotional for me.
To help us discuss how Hebron and Palestinians more broadly are impacted by Israel's occupation, we're joined by a few of the people who worked on the film. Joining us from San Francisco is Dina Takruri, senior presenter at AJ Plus and co-author of They Called Me a Lioness, A Palestinian Girl's Fight for Freedom. And in occupied East Jerusalem, filmmaker and cameraman Ayman Abu Ramuz. And last but not least, with us from Tel Aviv, Ori Javati, advocacy director at Breaking the Silence. We want to, of course, include your thoughts on this show, so be sure to share your questions and comments right here in our YouTube chat and be part of the conversation. I want to get straight to it, Dina. So many questions for you. I'm curious, first off, how did the idea to work on this documentary come about? It's much more personal than your other work or your, you know, the work I'm familiar with. And for me, it really hit differently because of that.
Yeah, first of all, thanks, Ahmed. It's good to be here, and it's good to see Ori and Ayman in a less tense environment. I was planning, you know, as you heard in the trailer, I have reported from the occupied West Bank several times throughout my career. It's also where most of my family lives, and so I knew I would be taking a trip there this summer, and I was sort of brainstorming with my producer, Mohammed Safin, and he came up with the idea of, you know, you're from Hebron. I'm actually from Hebron on both sides, mother and father, but my dad grew up there and lived there the longest, and so the idea came about to go there, to visit Hebron, to retrace my father's footsteps, and to tell the story of the occupation there in a very sort of discovery and personal way. You know, we say later in the film that my dad can't really return, and yeah. I also wanted to honor him and to sort of give this as a sort of a contribution to my family lineage and to my ancestors.
And, you know, it's interesting. Ayman, I've also worked with you in Palestine. I'm curious, working with Dina on such a personal project for you, reporting and working there day in, day out, what was it like for you to be part of that process?
Actually, first of all, hi, Ahmed. Hi, everyone. Yeah, I worked with you before and with AJ Plus, and I enjoy it. With Dina, when we started this like when we wanted to go to Hebron, and I know it's very emotional for her, so it's make me feel like I'm a part of this story. I need to get it as spontaneous it should be.
Yeah.
Like, I feel more emotional because I'm covering her something personal, like her childhood, father's childhood, and her hometown, which is, she doesn't know a lot about it. So, yeah, it was really emotional for me to cover this with Dina, like, it was really emotional, and to be honest, I was shocked because when I started filming, usually, you know, we want to be like drinking coffee, to be in a good mood. Like, actually, the first clip I shot with Dina, it's take my mood away, and I feel like I can't continue this day because the day started with stop filming, show me your footage, delete it, I've called the police. Okay, guys, calm down.
You're talking about the interactions with Israeli soldiers, correct?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and I want to talk.
This was my first.
I want to talk more about that.
We literally just started rolling and we got pounced on and surrounded and swarmed. And it really set the tone for the rest of the day. And Ayman really bore the brunt of the harassment that day. And I've like apologized to him so many times and thanked him. But and there's something to say about how targeted cameras are by the Israeli military.
Right. And I hope we can discuss that more, because even at the top of the show, I mean, of the trailer that we played for our audience, I mean, that was apparent. Ori, on that note, I mean, you've served in the military there in Israel. And I want to ask you, now that you're giving these guided tours in Hebron, I know this is part of your job with Breaking the Silence. Tell us why you do that and what it was like for you to be part of this project.
So very basically, Breaking the Silence is a group of former soldiers like me. We all served in the occupied territories in different units, in different times, in different places. And what we all share in common is that we understand that we must expose this reality of the occupation, of what it means to control the Palestinians the way we do, and what it includes, through the testimonies of our own service. Yeah, we already did it. We already took part in it. And now the minimum that we can do is talk about this reality through our testimonies. And this is the one of the reasons that we do the tour in Hebron. Yeah, many of our testifiers serve in Hebron or served in Hebron in the past. Mm. And in Hebron, you can see very clearly the different types of elements of control that the occupation includes. And I will say that specifically the project with Ina and the day we spent together in Hebron was different than the usual tours that I guide. I also today just came back from a tour in Hebron. But with Ina is a bit different, because it's very rare, for me it never happened until then, to walk in the streets of Hebron with Dina, with a Palestinian whose family is from Hebron, yeah, who now lives somewhere else, who have these strong ties to this land, and were pushed away from it. And that was a very special moment for me, and also talking to her father during the filming, that was also unique.
And I'm glad you brought up her father, Dina. I've met your father, and I have to say, you know, on a personal note, a real tender guy he can be. And, you know, when I was watching the documentary, I was definitely struck by this part of the film. Let's share it with our audience, and I'll come back to you. Take a look.
Hi, Baba.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Oh, I'm fine.
I want to show you. I think this is where you grew up. Is this...
This is Shuhada the street. During the days, you see the people on the market, and at night, I could see the singing and the dancing. It was like the heart of the city. Sad, so sad.
It's so sad.
I had a mixed feeling, nostalgia with anger.
Dina, I know how proud your dad is of your journalistic work and just all you've accomplished, but that moment, you walking there knowing he can't be there, what was it like for you?
Oh man, if you played another 30 seconds, you see me crying, because Ayman asked, how does this feel for you, Dina? And it was very emotional. I mean, there's guilt, there's sadness on his, you know, sadness for him. Where I was standing right there was a street where no Palestinians are allowed to walk, even if they live on that street. They have to exit their homes and enter through a back entrance. And so technically, by virtue of me being Palestinian American, I wasn't even supposed to be there. But I was literally standing 10 feet away or less. That's the cemetery where his parents are buried, you know, where my grandparents are, my ancestors are. And right above the cemetery is the house he grew up in. And just to see, you know, to think of like the memories he told me about how vibrant it was, how he used to carry a basket down there and go to the vegetable store and buy, fruit and walk back home. His middle school was on that street. It used to be like, you know, a super busy center of Palestinian life, and it's an absolute ghost town. And the only sounds you hear are the fluttering of Israeli flags above. Mm. And the only people you see are some settlers and some armed soldiers. It devastated me, you know, and I was really sad for him. So it was quite an emotionally charged moment, which Ayman caught on to and asked me about on camera.
Ayman's good at that. And Ayman, when you ask Dina about that, I'm curious, your experience, particularly since Israeli soldiers killed Shirin Abu Akle, things seem from afar, I haven't been there for several years now, but it seems as though it's harder to work as a journalist. It seems as though the occupation is more entrenched. What can you share with us, Ayman, about what it was like trying to report this story?
Like, to film in Palestine for anyone, it's something really tough. Like, you need to think twice wherever you're going to go to film in Palestine. And you've already been here, and you know that it's tough. It's hard to film here, especially when you are a journalist, when you are in a country that they claim that they are the only democratic country in the Middle East. Actually, they can say to everyone this is fake democracy, but for me, as someone who has been living here for more than 30 years, I know this democracy is fake when it's come to apartheid and ethnic cleansing and what they do to people. And we just want to show what's the people, how the daily life of these people. So it's become like really, really, you're going to feel the apartheid.
And so Ayman, I want to ask you specifically, sorry, forgive me, after Shireen, as you were just about to say, I mean, has it gotten harder for you, your perception of your ability to move, to report? Do you feel more targeted? Are soldiers harassing you more? Are more areas off limits?
Actually, yes. After Shireen murdered, like, I feel like whenever I want to go, especially when I go to West Bank, sometimes I feel I will not go back to my house. And even if I wear the helmet and I wear the jackets and everything, like I'm a press and I'm a camera person, I feel that I might be not going back to my house because of what's happened to Shireen. And I feel it's really getting more harder when you deal especially with soldiers. Like, I can tell these people they don't see anyone. Like, I'm still Palestinian Arab for them. Whatever I do, I'm trying to cover this kind of, like, these two countries, Israel and Palestine. I see nothing from anyone perspective. I see from my camera perspective. And I'm not trying to be any pro-Israeli or pro-Palestinian. I'm just trying to see. What I see is what I show to the people. This is my job.
Most certainly. And I saw that Dina and also Ori were both nodding as you were outlining the reality of what it's like to try to work on the ground. We have a small clip from actually the documentary that kind of illustrates this. Let's play it for our audience, then I'll come to you, Ori. Take a look.
يعني أكثر من مرة أولاد الصغار كان عندي ثوم يبوافي نزل المستوطن كان يدبهم على تحت
يحملهم يدبهم؟
والله كان يحملهم على تحت
كيف تعاملوك المستوطنين اللي عايشين هون؟
وأنا عملتهم يعني من مرة مش بني أدمين يعني بعدوا بتفوا بضربوا البنت بتخاف تنزل المرة بتخاف تنزل
أنا بقول لك كمان يوم أخوي حجر صبون هون انتفخ
مين رمى الحجر؟
Ori, as I understand it, I've been following Breaking the Silence for many years now, but when we look at the politics and who the Israeli people are electing, Netanyahu, who was found to be a corrupt leader, who was, you know, charged, and he's somehow now made a comeback, I'm wondering, where's this sort of lack of consciousness of sort of the level of dehumanization that on the individual level, but also collectively, they're putting on this population? Why, in your opinion, do so many soldiers not sort of wake up and break the silence earlier?
Yeah, I think that this is one of the core issues of the problems here. And for us in the Israeli society, we are raised our entire life, yeah, entire upbringing, our childhood, our teenage years in high school, media, the education system, everything directs us, yeah, to become a combat soldier in the military. Everything directs us and tells us that we have the most moral army in the world. Yeah, it's something that people love to say about Israel. Israelis love to say about Israel. And we are not being encouraged whatsoever to ask questions. And more importantly than that, yeah, or maybe together with that, there is also no incentive today for an Israeli to look critically at the situation. Yeah, relatively, yeah, while of course we all have family members, friends who are victims of the situation as well, and people who died as a result of the situation, relatively speaking, the Israelis are not affected by the occupation. Our day-to-day life is barely affected by the occupation. Mm. Yeah, our homes are not invaded in the middle of the night.
I understand. I mean, I appreciate this point. Forgive me, I don't mean to interject, but I appreciate this point. At the same time, let's take another look at a clip that kind of illustrates the way in which you interacted with these soldiers while you were all working on this film. Take a look. You know, Ori, I see them pushing you there, and obviously anyone who's worked on the ground or tried to interact with soldiers, I mean, the dehumanization is immediate and instant. And Dina, while that was all happening, I mean, could you give us a little bit more context? Was that at the beginning of the trip? What was going through your mind? Did you think that maybe you wouldn't be able to report this story?
You know, that was literally when we had just arrived. Like, Ayman had just started rolling like 30 seconds prior. We're filming me walking down. That's the second checkpoint. And I was greeting Ori and his colleague Joel. And right as we were saying, hi, how are you? I'm Dina. They came in and they swarmed us. And for me, like, you know, I had so much anticipation. Like, I had studied the area. I had talked to my dad. He drew me maps. I'm visiting my hometown. And it just got so tainted. And you brought up Shirin Abu Akla earlier. And, you know, she was my friend and she was my colleague. And this was just weeks after she was murdered. And she was fresh in my mind. I cannot look at an Israeli soldier in that uniform the same.
Was it different for you? I mean, I know you've worked there before. You've always come across quite stoic in your deliveries and in the way you interact with these soldiers. Was it different this time because of her loss? I mean, she was perhaps, as we all know, maybe one of the most relentless and persistent reporters on this issue and depicting daily life under occupation. So it was different for you, Dina, this time.
100%. I mean, even, you know, in 2018, Ayman and I were reporting. We weren't doing anything and they threw stun grenades at us. I've never been under the delusion that being a journalist will somehow protect me. But when you see how Shirin Abu Akla was murdered in cold blood, despite wearing a helmet and press vest marked press, despite being a U.S. citizen, in that moment, you know, I'm thinking my U.S. passport's not protecting me. The camera's not protecting me. And even in that same location where we were just a few weeks prior, another Palestinian-American journalist named Haya Yasmin was also detained by soldiers there while she was filming her show. She was taken. She was strip searched in front of her mother, you know, for no reason. And they had one of the soldiers had the butt of his rifle in her mother's stomach while she was being strip searched. I told Ori, I don't know what would have happened if you guys weren't there. You know, if I didn't have two former Israeli soldiers there to protect me in my hometown. So there was a lot of feelings and there was a lot of thinking about Shirin and thinking about how these guys can do anything they want with impunity, with the backing of the United States.
I think that the issue of the dehumanization that you mentioned, Ahmad, is key to understand this, together with the issue of the fact that the Israel and the occupation is doing everything it can, in order to hide this reality. Yeah, this year has been the year, one of the deadliest years in the last two decades of Palestinians being killed by the Israeli military. Yeah, and it's not, of course, Shirin's death is one of those terrible killings. Yeah, Shirin's killing. And we're just seeing the situation growing. Yeah, more Palestinians die, more settler violence, more home demolitions, more home invasions. The situation is only becoming worse, and it's more scary. It's becoming more scary for, of course, first and foremost for Palestinians living under this. Yeah, but I can tell you that also for the organizations, for the activists, it's becoming more difficult as well.
Well, and I know that you feature soldiers who are anonymous most of the time, if not all the time, and I understand because of the fear of retribution economically. But I wonder, without breaking the silence and going public and being visible and. And I think so much of what I've heard is that there's like sort of there's no incentive because they don't see the occupation. It doesn't affect their lives there in Israel. So I wonder, with all that said, Ayman, you know, our colleague Shirin, when she was killed, we saw complete lack of accountability. The same themes you're discussing, impunity. Now, six very long months later, we've seen the FBI in the U.S. announcing that they're going to launch an investigation. I kind of want to ask you all this. I mean, we've since then heard the White House informing Israeli counterparts that they weren't involved in the decision to open this investigation, you know, kind of backtracking away from it. You know, this lack of accountability, do you have any hope, not just on the issue of Shireen, but Ayman, do you have hope, and where do you draw hope from, that there will be accountability for each life lost, but also for the broader issues that, you depict in this documentary are happening?
Like, actually, I feel that this country, no one can judge it. They just do whatever they like, and they always say that we follow the law, which is not true. Like, they say that we respect our law. Actually, they put all the laws that they put in Israel. When they have any Palestinian or Arab, they have the right to break the law. And they can say, like, security reason, and done. It's finished. Close case. So I don't feel like I went to Jenin last time to see, like, where Shireen, where they killed her. Ahmed, it's really obvious. Anyone will come to Jenin, like anyone, not in one who have to investigate. It doesn't have to be investigator. You can tell that from where are the soldier, where the soldier based the jeep of the soldier, and where the Palestinians were shooting, when they claim that there is a Palestinian shoot on the direction of Shireen. There is a school and there is two buildings in front of it. Like, I went there and took point of view shots. Like, I can't see anything. Like, where Shireen used to be sitting, it's only there is a military jeep shooting on her direction. And that's it. Like, it's obvious. And I don't think anyone wants investigation to
I think what's so maddening is, despite as you say, obvious facts on the ground, we still see time and time again the ability to act with impunity. And it's, you know, in the documentary, just to bring it back to your work, Dina, I wanna share with our audience a clip of a conversation you had with Selwa, a young girl there. Take a look, and then we'll come back to you.
ראו אותם, מרימה את הסכין. אם היא לא אומרת איפה הסכין הזה, אני אחשוב
גם סכין.
ניסיון אחרון.
את כל ג'יפט, מה יש כל הסכין?
אבא שלא אומרת. הכל זה, אני אחשוב לך. איתי אצלי. יאללה, תביא הזיכון. תביא הזיכון. אמנוע.
תקלו מי, וחדו לי, אני עודס את הסיימו, עד יחאו מי. عادت سعرة مع حقوما لما فلتوني عادت سعرة ما فلتوني يعني كثير ساعات لما فلتوني وحقوا معي
بتخافي يعتقلوكي كمان مرة؟
أنا حسيت إنه وأنا نايمة حسيت إنه بدهم يعتقلوني بنص الليل.
You know, on a personal note, what's always so troubling for me and difficult to process when I see these sorts of videos, either in your work or on social media, is the way that the occupation and the Israeli soldiers treat or dehumanize Palestinian children, whether abusing them, interrogating them, torturing them, whatever it might be. Dina, watching this and being there and bearing witness, if you will, seeing the father have to restrain himself, what was that like? I mean, just especially since the impetus of this trip was you kind of coming back to connect with your father's hometown.
Exactly. I mean, I haven't stopped thinking about Selwa since the day we met her. And I exactly had that same thought, that this could have been my life as a little Palestinian girl from Hebron, and that could have been my father. I mean, this poor child and her siblings are so traumatized. They were accused of playing with a knife right in front of their house, even though there's cameras surrounding them proving the contrary. But because a settler went and told a soldier she had a knife, they believed him and they arrested her. As we were standing there talking, you know, it's such a tense situation because their house is, you know, right above them is an Israeli settlement. They're surrounded by these illegal Israeli settlers. There are nets above that alleyway to catch the stones and the trash and the sometimes urine that settlers throw down at them. So every little sound we hear, she looks up. And I ask her, are you afraid that they're going to throw something at you? And she said, yes, because it happens so much. Just a week prior, her five-year-old brother was hit by a rock right here, and his face swelled up from a settler. And she told me, you know, we look at the settler kids, we can see them playing with their toys every single day, and we want to go out and play like that.
Yeah.
And this just shows you the innocence of children. Her brother said, wow, let's go join them. And she said, we can't join them. This is an occupation.
And unfortunately, Dina, I appreciate you sharing those thoughts. We can't continue this conversation now live on air. We've run out of time, but it's an incredible documentary. For those of you who haven't seen it, check it out. Thank you to our guests, Dina, Ayman, and Ori. Certainly not the last time we'll be talking about this here at The Stream. Be sure to take a look at the documentary and let us know what you think.